What's up, everybody? Terry Foy here with Patrick McHugh and Kyle Devitt and Chris Rosenthal. We are the Inside Lacrosse Squad. We are going to be talking about the Premier Lacrosse League and its betting lines. This is one of the biggest developments of the offseason as far as the Premier Lacrosse League is concerned. First, they announced a partnership with BetGenius that allowed them to basically provide data that betting houses were going to pick up and use. And then in, I believe, early July, William Hill, a sports betting house predominantly based out of England and one that, Kyle, I know you're very familiar with, as Maya is a big Premier League fan, posted the first championship odds, and the momentum built from there, most recently with DraftKings announcing a formal partnership with the PLL. And this is a really interesting, unique thing that's certainly happened all across sports media over the last couple of years since the Supreme Court decision changed the laws around sports betting. And definitely you've seen the influx of television programming on ESPN and Fox and other television outlets, including NBC Sports, that are doing a lot of this stuff around sports betting. So we brought on our analysts who follow pro lacrosse more closely than anybody else, and Kyle and Chris to talk, as well as Patrick, who has really dug into some of the nuances of the differences between what lines are available on which house. And we're going to get into all that. But, you know, Patrick, I know you've got kind of a lot of thoughts around what this essentially means and how excited you are around the advent of sports betting in pro lacrosse. So I'll give you the floor to start. What do you think?
I'm excited. I love talking numbers in sports. And so that is nothing more fun than sports gambling when it comes to that, because you get to put some real actionable items on the table in terms of what are probabilistically what our team's chances of winning the championship and that kind of thing. And I think they kind of the most, just if we're going to start with championship odds, I think kind of the most interesting thing to me is how kind of wide open the lines are for this field, that the difference between the favorites and the team, like the teams in sixth and seventh spot in terms of championship odds, are really not that far off compared to what we see in other sports. And I think that leads to some really kind of interesting just conceptions about the way to approach this. And personally, I don't know what Kyle and Chris, what thoughts you guys have on this, but I feel like they're underconfident about the favorites. And I think if you feel confident that you think the Archers or the Redwoods or the Whipsnakes are the favorite to win it, you're getting pretty good odds compared to what you're seeing in other leagues, even with far more teams and far more rounds of playoffs, what it takes to win. So I think there's some real opportunities there. And I think that kind of, I like the favorites in the championship odds.
Well, so that's what it's like to hear from a betting expert, or at least somebody who has followed this closely. Kyle and Chris.
I just play one on YouTube.
Yes. Kyle and Chris, I know that you guys are a little bit more novice. So, Kyle, can you just kind of give us a little sense of what your point of view is on this whole topic?
I mean, it's important, right? So you're getting another kind of wrinkle thrown into the overall like vibe of what PLL is trying to do, which is be a modern sports league. And it's important in that sense. I think for actual betting, I'm probably not going to be the best person to talk about it, but I think that actually breaking things down in a way that Chris and I do when we write about it is probably going to be beneficial, at least to some people that are going to bet, even if it's not necessarily going to be us. Are we even allowed to do this? Like, is that
a little touch and go?
No, yeah.
A little touch and go.
Whatever. I mean, I think it's very cool though. Like, it's not a thing that I'm against in any way. I think it just brings more people in, and anything that brings more people to pro lacrosse, like, I'm with it. Let's do it.
And Rosie, how about for you? Is this something that if you were a fan and not an analyst, you would be engaging in? Would you be throwing a few dollars down?
I think I would, and more so, I think it's just really a great opportunity for people who are a little more hesitant to get involved in pro lacrosse. You know, maybe they don't have an attachment to it. Maybe they didn't, you know, go to certain colleges or watch the game being played, but now they see, oh, there is something else I can gamble on. And, you know, some people like gambling, you know, more than they like watching the sports. You know, sometimes they're just like laying down the bets and finding out how they did. And, you know, conversely, some people are only interested in sports once they can gamble on them and get their own sense of skin in the game. Same sort of thing you see in fantasy sports, even when there isn't money involved. You know, people like developing that emotional attachment. So I think this is a really great avenue for the PLL, and, you know, people should be able to take advantage with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody said it better than Michael Jordan on The Last Dance when he was addressing his gambling issues, and he said it's a hobby for him. Now, obviously, it's a little different when you basically have a bottomless pool of cash, and certainly want to provide all the important provisos around the fact that, number one, we are not experts. So to the extent that qualifiers in terms of providing any advice, we're not providing any advice. We're basically just walking through our own thought processes. And obviously, you know, in conjunction with the fact that these services are only available in some states, all of those states provide a lot of support and resources around any type of problem gambling issues. So, you know, make sure that you're cognizant of and recognize those, you know, particularly because they're oftentimes right side by side with where some of these lines are being offered. But getting into a little bit of the nitty gritty, Patrick mentioned that when he looks at the championship odds, and so basically the way in which all of this was unveiled is the way that most sports season starts, which every team has odds placed on the likelihood that they're going to win the championship. You know, for me, I already mentioned being a Premier League fan and Leicester being a 5,000-1 shot when the year they won the Premier League is one of the, you know, kind of stories of lore in sports betting history. And so, you know, when these odds came out, I want to pat myself on the back for something that happened last year, which I take every opportunity to remind Patrick of, which is, you know, we did a little bit of like kind of our own fun betting around PLL last season. And I took a very significant underdog that was appropriately priced. It just so happened that that bet hit on the very first goal that was scored in Premier League Cross League history. I'm always going to take a first look at the longest shots and think about whether or not there's decent value relative to what it seems intuitively they should be priced at. And so it's interesting.
Can I interrupt just to say how perfectly priced that was? Because yes. I mean, this is the quirky. So I had the faceoff guy to score the first goal in the PLL championship at 40-1.
First goal in the first game, in the inaugural game.
Yeah. The very first goal of the PLL ever. And so Stephen Kelly obviously scored it. And the Archers throughout that season scored 120 goals in the regular season. Stephen Kelly had three of them, or exactly one in 40.
It was unbelievable. But because I took a faceoff guy to win, to score the first goal, I won that bet. And as a result, because it was a long shot, it basically skewed the entire game for the rest of the summer. I immediately looked at the Water Dogs as a championship pick. And I think that there are a handful of reasons why I started that way. First and foremost, continuity matters less in an expansion year. And I think it matters quasi less in a shortened season in the sense that every team's continuity was disrupted because they lost players to the expansion draft and then obviously added players through the entry draft. Right, players coming over from Major League Lacrosse or through the college draft. And so roster turnover was probably a little bit higher than it would have been in a non-expansion year, which means the expansion team is at less of a disadvantage. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, and I think we were seeing this week, in a championship series, you know, continuity, I think, is value tactically and chemistry-wise. I think that this event is less going to be won by tactics and chemistry and more won by brute force physicality, particularly stamina, injury avoidance, all that sort of stuff, which means that I think that continuity matters a little bit less than it otherwise would. And then the fact of the matter is that I like a lot of the players that the Water Dogs picked up. I am an unapologetic Ben Reeves champion. You know, Zach Currier is a complete unknown. He might end up being one of the best players in the league. And the list goes down from there. So for me, Patrick, to hear you say that the kind of odds begun or the championship odds began with the favorites being relatively well valued, does that mean that I'm being foolish because the long shots are not as the return isn't as high as it should be?
Yeah. So I guess it depends on how much of a long shot you actually think the Water Dogs and the Chrome are, but I feel like if you go into, I don't know, an NBA season or an NFL season, basically the odds, there's, I don't know, a third of the teams in the league that you should be like, they have no shot. In the NBA, really, you can be like, there's, I don't know, there's 10 teams in a season that have a realistic shot to win an NBA championship.
And I think the odds reflect that. Whereas I kind of, just to give myself kind of like a calibration on these, there's seven teams. So we're looking at, on average, what every team has a 1 in 7 chance. If every team was equal, they'd have a 1 in 7 chance. With the Water Dogs, you're only getting +1,000. So that's a one.
Which suggests that it's a 10-team league.
Say that again?
Which suggests that if it were a 10-team league and every team was evenly valued, that's what their odds should be.
11. The okay. +1,000 correlates to 1 in 11. A 1 in 11, right. Like that's where you get equal value. And so for a 7-team league, for what is theoretically the worst team in the league, only to be a 1 in 11 chance at winning it is not that good.
So
if you think they're below average, like the difference between 1 in 7 and 1 in 11 is not that significant. And so, but I think at the same time though, the reason I don't think the Water Dogs are a bad bet. And I mean, Kyle and I, when we wrote that column analyzing the William Hill odds, had them fourth after the three favorites, is because I'm not convinced that the Water Dogs are a below average team. I think you can make a credible case that the Water Dogs have just as good a chance of any of those other teams to be maybe say the fourth best team.
Right.
And if you think the Water Dogs, if you think the Water Dogs are an average team, so I look at it, you mentioned like Zach Currier, but I think Connor Kelly, I think was an underrated player coming out last, like you can make a case that he's a top five, top six midfielder in the league between Currier, Connor Kelly, Ben McIntosh, Daniel Ipe. I think there's a credible case that the Water Dogs have the best midfield in the league. And if you think this is a midfielder's league, which some people do, no, Kyle, you give me a look, Kyle.
No, did I?
You, oh, there did was I? A look. There was a look. Do you want to butt in on the Water Dogs midfield?
I mean, it's a good – the thing about the Water Dogs that's really intriguing is that they really are primed to be the case study for positionless lacrosse in terms of their personnel. Which is incredible. I think it could be a like nuclear reactor of goals coming out of there. It could also, on the other side of the ball, be the complete opposite, because I don't know if I trust that entire defense. You got to go with BJ Grill's going to run that defense if all things kind of are equal, and Brody Merrill's going to run that defense as well.
Yeah.
What?
Brody Merrill is on the Water Dogs as well.
Yeah, but this is the thing with Brody, and like Chris will back me up here. Brody's role is different than it's ever been in the past like two seasons, right? Where before you could kind of deploy him wherever you wanted, and now he's more of like a top level cornerback that is moved to free safety. You know, like he's still good, he's still playing in the league. But his primary role is kind of the secondary checker, the guy that pops out on the break to kind of start the hinge pass up the field.
I think the difference, you're talking number one versus like the quarterback of the defense. I think Brody Merrill is probably the leader of that defense, right?
Yeah, but BJ is going to run it because that's what he does. Like he just talks. That dude, like he's one of the short king people. He's one of my people. So like he has to. Like that's like his role. Like he's going to speak and talk and move people into different positions. The problem with that is not that he can't do it. It's that he hasn't done it lately. He was very successful with the Outlaws when he did that in the MLL. So I think I have full confidence that he can do it. He was great at Marquette when he did it as well. I don't know if Sabia's a top, a three or a two, you know, I don't know where Ryan Lurice is going to play. I have a lot of questions about that defense, and that's why that's the only reason I like made a look on my face. But the great equalizer is that they do have Zach Currier, who does everything. Patrick, do you want to tell people what getting Currier is?
Oh, so this is a term I came up with because I've seen him do it so many times. It's if you're a face-off guy and you win the clamp and you haven't what you have what you thought 3 seconds ago was an open wing, and you pull the ball to that wing, and then the other team's wing beats your guy cleanly to the ball, that's called you got couriered.
Yeah. Fast break. Goal.
Yeah. I think it's one of maybe in lacrosse, probably one of the worst feelings is you're a face-off guy, you win the clamp, you pull out the ball to a guy who you think is open by 10 yards, then you turn around and Zach Currier going the other way on a fast break.
Yeah.
Well, that was a lot about the Water Dogs, which is appropriate because they're an expansion team and people like talking about them. But Patrick.
I got another thing to say about the Water Dogs.
All right, we'll save it and we'll come back to it because we got to talk about their first game of the season. Rosie, who do you like as a champion pick?
So I was kind of nervous to do this, but there's no real non-emotional reason not to do it. It wouldn't surprise me if the Whipsnakes found a way to repeat. And the reason why I like the Whipsnakes is because they were able to retain everybody on the defensive half of the ball. You know, starting up top with Joe Nardella, Michael Earhart, again, who, I mean, honestly, we should probably just kind of stop betting against any organization he's with, you know, after Team USA and then last season. He's just kind of been on a roll, just, you know, stepping over everybody. And, you know, maintaining that entire defensive core and bringing Kyle Barnlore back again, that's a great place to start. I didn't love how many people they had to get rid of on the other side, but still maintaining somebody like Mike Tannenchuk in the midfield and Matt Rambo down at attack. If you can pencil in a couple other players who can help, you know, if Zed Williams shows up and can help, you know, I really have no reason to think that they can't do it again, you know, other than just the kind of external factors of, is it super tough? Is it scary to repeat?
Kyle, what do you think of that?
I think the guy that you talk about there that they added to is TJ Camizio, who I think PLL fans are not ready for. With Ty Warner and Jake Bernhardt,
they're going to be undodgeable.
It's not even that. It's the middle of the field, right? The definition of the word of midfield is both sides of the ball and the middle. Those are three guys that boss the middle of the field as shorties. I don't think I can think of a better, like, straight up rope. Like, do they need a pole?
Yeah, I was joking yesterday about three short stick defenses, and they're probably the case study of anybody that would ever try to do it.
Yeah, so, I mean, we were talking about positionless lacrosse with the Water Dogs. I mean, we're talking about two actual two-way players, not like, oh, this guy's a two-way player and because he played defense for three games. Insert which player you think that is in the chat. I think that having the actual two-way guys that can carry, score, strip, bring the ball up, and they're smart too. Those are guys that don't go off sides. Those are guys that are coaches on the field. You know, that's very, very valuable. Yeah, as well. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's also, speaking of, you know, defensive midfielders, that Earhart is another, when you talk about, like, can they find contributors? One thing that really helped the Whipsnakes last year is they were getting basically a point per game from their LSM spot and from Nardella, the faceoff X, which is, there's a lot of teams in the PLL last year who were hoping for, like, a point a game out of their third or fourth offensive midfielder. And so when you look at the Whipsnakes of can they find that production, they have it in other areas outside of their top offensive six in a way that other teams don't.
Kyle, is there anybody else that you want to touch on from a championship odds standpoint before we move on to opening lines?
I mean, I'm not really someone that's super big on stuff that happened last season, but if you break down how the teams finished, it was Whipsnakes, Redwoods, Archers. The reason they're there is not because of goals. It's because of defense. And which defense got the most backup and improved the most out of those three? The Archers. I mean, Eli Gobrecht is very good. People like don't know who he is. I know who he is. I picked him on a Team USA projection for like 2022, and I remember showing it to Terry, to you, and Matt Kinnear, and you were like, "What? No." And I was like, No, he's good. You'll see. Maybe he's not at that level yet, but he's very good, and he helps that defense immensely. And I think, you know, the addition of Christian Mazzone to that midfield as well, to go with Schreiber as a secondary ball carrier, and Grant Ament down an attack to make, like, the most creative triad in the history of lacrosse. Like, we're looking at a really, 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 really good team with very few holes and tons of depth. So I have to look at the Archers. I have to look at the Redwoods. Can Finn Sullivan replace Matt Landis? He's probably 75% of Matt Landis, so that's pretty good. I think the loss of Jules is huge in that spot. And I actually, people keep saying like Clark Peterson is going to be in there. It's not. I think it's going to be Joe Walters. That makes the most sense to me. Like, just pop him in there. He's so, like, the ability that he has shown and evolved with as a player and a playmaker. Like, people forget when he came out of college, like 15 years ago, he was a shooter.
He was a shooter.
He just shot. That's all he did. And now he's this, like, super cerebral playmaker, and he, like, got super fit, lost all this weight. He has, like, a quick first step still, like, gets away, has that great step back feed. I would look at them to kind of exploit that a little bit more. Plus, they added Miles Jones, who's another kind of downhill dodger that they desperately needed last year. And they still got to the championship game. And every other point about the Whipsnakes has already been made, you know, except for they got Matt Rambo, the MVP. You know, like, you can't discount his season last year, even though, like, I think a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know if he can do it again. Pretty sure he can do it again. Pretty sure.
Rosie, there are a couple teams that we haven't touched on yet, including the most popular team in the league, the one that features the co-founder, Paul Rabil. What are your thoughts on the Atlas?
So the two things about the Atlas that really, really jump out, obviously Rob Pinnell coming over there, definitely, you know, on that half of the ball, you have to think, okay, maybe, you know, they do lose Kieran McArdle, who was really good on the assists last year. I don't think that was really appreciated numbers-wise. Did a great job distributing. So they lose him, but Chris Kluche had a really strong beginning to the season before ultimately falling off and losing his place in the lineup. So if he can get some work in there and Rob Pinnell can kind of, you know, do what we've seen him do over the past few years, but work out some sort of coordination with Eric Law and Ryan Brown, it's a few moving parts, but I trust that they're all capable of doing it. You know, I think they're all capable of tailoring their game around one another. The big question about the Atlas is Tucker Durkin, how that defense is going to fare. You know, last year the defense wasn't that great relative to some of these other defenses like the Redwoods or the Whipsnakes. They were not in that conversation at any point. And losing Tucker Durkin, I haven't heard anything in the past couple of days. I believe he's going to be out the entirety of the tournament. You know, we'll see how their protocols go for that. But if he's gone and everyone else has to bump up and, you know, the two becomes the one and the three becomes the two, and then you bring somebody off the bench or something like that, I think they could get in some serious problems with their close defense that they might be struggling to fix at this point. So I wouldn't have them in the conversation with that upper tier, even though they added Pinnell on the offense.
Kyle, first of all, are you drinking beer? Because that would be a badass move.
No. I'm like, sometimes
it looks like you can be mistaken for a light. I think I'm okay with that.
I'll be pretty
The other team I wanted to touch on definitively was, you mentioned the standings, the way that the teams finished, but you mentioned the way they finished at the end of the postseason, the way they finished at the end of the regular season. We haven't talked about the chaos. I mean, your thoughts on Andy Tower's squad.
So, Chris, has anyone ever respected the chaos? I'm curious.
It depends. Are you asking the chaos? Because the answer is definitely not.
Well, oh, that's right. No one's ever written anything good about them ever.
No.
Wait, that's not true. I do love that aspect of PLL marketing. It was like, oh, everyone's counting against us. Everyone's against us. You watch all the videos and they're like, no one believes in us. And I'm just like, checks out.
So I think, though, in the case of the chaos, though, like, in now, because I feel like that's the interesting thing now about betting lines is we have people not we have a monetary sort of metric of how much people believe in a team, and the chaos line has been getting better and better as people are betting on other teams and not the chaos.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I think that the way that they've constructed their team is, they're just going straight deuces on everything. They're just doing two-man game from the wing, from the top, from behind, diagonally, however they want to do it. They're going to have possessions where five guys are on the crease, and it's going to be like an ISO ball for Fields. I think, unfortunately, at the end of the season, teams wanted that more. And the strength of this team, no matter who is on it, is how they play, right? So one of the most they're one of the most entertaining pro teams I think I've ever seen through the first like five or six games last season. So, I mean, that's a positive thing. It's pretty incredible to watch. A lot of that starts from the back with Blaze Reardon. They had great play from their poles. Troy Ray was actually wildly underrated. I'll get that. There's a player who's wildly underrated right there. Amazing. Again, I like to watch guys that do their work between the 2-point lines. And he's one of those guys. Jake Furcaro, it had a complete breakout season. I think teams started doubling him a lot more towards the end of the year, and his production wasn't as high as it was in the beginning because I think people were kind of like letting him shoot. And then, like, you can't do that with kind of anyone on this team. You know, like, this is a team full of shooters and creators, but I don't know if it has the speed that it had last year or the ability to create turnovers to go into transition that they had last year. So I don't know if I'm down on them so much as I'm like, okay, now you kind of have to reprove that you could do the things that you did at the beginning of the season in a new season. Because at the end of the season, you were not doing anything.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning they finished the regular season 7-2, but they start – sorry, 7-3. They started 7-2. They're 7-2 in their first 9 games, and then they lost their last game of the regular season and their 2 playoff games. That they finished the year 0-3.
Yeah.
And I think that's
– I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I think as teams figured out what they wanted to do, other teams adjusted, and they didn't.
I mean, I'm sure they have a different plan during this tournament, right? Like, they know that they have to kind of exploit more of their matchups than they did. And I think a lot of their possessions died, unfortunately, in the stick of Connor Fields and him dodging one-on-one from X and hoping that that would bail them out. And by the way, he's got a ton of highlights from that. But he also led the league in turnovers with 55. Like, facts aren't mean.
Right. I think they're going to have to kind of reinvent themselves entirely. You know, the last year's Chaos team just can't exist this year. You know, no Miles Jones, yep. Or class on this occasion. He's, you know, staying home injured. You know, you bring Sergio Salcedo into the mix, and then a bunch of attackmen who weren't there last year. You know, like, if they're running with Austin Stotts, are they going to be able to juggle everyone? Are they going to start sending some of the, you know, conventional box guys in through midfield? You know, how's Curtis Dixon going to fit in with that? Because, you know, they basically had the 3 attackmen for almost the entirety of last season. There was a little bit of time where they put, like, you know, I think Kevin Buchanan was down there for a game when they, you know, kind of had to keep things balanced. But they kind of had this core 3, you know, with Byrne and Fields and Thompson. But they're bringing some of those guys who weren't there last year. And so they're going to have to find a way to incorporate all of these players in. And it might mean shaking what we thought was kind of a standard up a little bit or running them as midfielders. You know, I don't know how Austin Stotts and Connor Fields are both going to handle distribution or if it's going to be an alternating thing. The one thing about this sort of compressed tournament is there isn't a lot of time to figure it out. So we'll see what Andy Towers has lined up for all of those guys.
All right, well, let's make sure that we talk about the opening weekend of action because there are lines and over-unders available for Saturday and Sunday's games. So just so everybody's aware, action begins Saturday at 4 p.m. with Redwoods versus Whippets on NBC. It's a rematch of last year's championship. And then at 7:30 on NBC Sports, Chaos versus Chrome. Chrome's probably the team that we've talked about least so far this podcast, so we'll get into that shortly. And then at 4 p.m. on Sunday, Water Dogs, the expansion team versus the Atlas, also available on NBC. So 2 games on broadcast television in the opening weekend, really exciting. Kudos to NBC and PLL for working out their schedule. Certainly it's already been well documented, but a big part of the championship series idea was born out of the postponement of the 2020 Olympics to 2021. And so instead of the opening ceremonies, tonight we get to look forward to Premier Lacrosse League action getting started on Saturday. So in that first game, the Redwoods are underdogs by 1.5 goals. It should be noted that each of these lines is a 1.5 goal swing or spread is the word that I was going for there. And compared to the other two games, the over-under is very low at 23.5. Patrick, how did you react to either of those numbers?
So I think it's – I guess can I take a step back and go like a little bit big picture on this?
Talking about the spreads as opposed to
– Yeah. So what I think is really interesting is – so I guess it has to be at least – a goal and a half. Otherwise it's just a, like, it's just a pick 'em. And so that's kind of the minimum spread, but it's interesting in two of the three games, the odds are longer on the spread than they are on the money line, that you can bet the Whippersnakes on the money line at -148. But if you want the Redwoods plus a goal and a half, it's -182.
And so explain a little bit more detail what exactly that means.
So that's – you have to – minus number – so -148 means you have to bet 148 to win 100. And then conversely, the Redwoods money line is +120, and the Whippersnakes minus a goal and a half is +150. So with the plus odds, you bet 100 to win 120 or bet 100 to win 150.
So basically that difference is the equivalent of a price of a goal. Right? It's the difference between winning versus winning by two.
Yes. And that seems – so, but I mean, the difference in the price of a goal is if you compare, like, the Whippersnakes, if you take the Whippersnakes money line, it's -148. So the odds are against you. And if you take the Whippersnakes minus a goal and a half, it's +150. So you're talking I have to do the math on what exactly it come out to, but basically you're talking if you give up a goal with the Whippersnakes – if you take Whippersnakes have to win by two, you're doubling your money over the Whippersnakes winning by one or more. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That I feel like the mistake in kind of these, I think the odds almost have the teams way, like it seems like the odds of a one goal game are way too high. And I wonder how much of that is them looking at the aggregate of last season. Because I think everybody remembers the last three weeks last season, like basically half of the games were one goal games for the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That very much changed at the end of the season. If you look at week eight through the playoffs, and the playoffs were seven games, so basically 2 weeks. So like the last 16 games of the season, there were only 2 1 goal games. There's a dramatic change from the beginning. And I think my theory on that is I think that's not random. There's obviously some randomness to it, but I think as teams kind of figured things out, the difference between the good teams and the bad teams, and the execution of a strategy in the game, once you got to scout of an opponent, the ability to exploit a difference or an advantage somewhere made a much bigger difference. But I remember, like, I want to say in training camp, there were some coaches experimenting with 10-man rides in the shorter field. And then I think as soon as they got into games, it quickly became apparent, oh, that was a really terrible idea. And you just wasted a day of training camp working on something you're never going to use. And then at the end of the season, teams kind of had figured out who they are. Like we're talking about the chaos, that other teams figured out what they wanted to do and figured out the counter to that. In the first couple weeks of the season, that wasn't apparent. And I think now there is less continuity because of the expansion, but there still is a ton of continuity. Like the Redwoods defense, we know what the Redwoods defense is going to look like. It's more or less the same guys. They're playing around the same scheme. Same with the Whippersnakes defense. You know, we know what Matt Rambo is going to do. We have an understanding of, of some different teams the way we didn't last year. And so I think there's money to be made here, basically betting against one goal games, so to speak, in which I think if you're going to bet the favorite, if you want to bet like in those red, if you want to bet the Whippersnakes, there's a lot more value in laying the goal and a half. And if you want to bet the Redwoods, take the money line.
Right.
Just because the value is so much better on those ends of things.
And is that true for all three games?
So the only one that it's pretty comparable, or it's not, it's, I guess I should, not comparable. The Water Dogs Atlas is not that way. Which sort of indicates, what does that mean in terms of odds of a one goal game? For whatever reason, the differences in that game are not as much, and maybe that reflects the uncertainty of the Water Dogs. Of the Water Dogs might be good or they might be bad. the there's more variability in the outcome of the Water Dogs because they're a new team. So there's a lower probability of a one goal game there. But you had a similar thing in the Chaos Chrome game where if you want the Chaos, if you lay the goal in a half, you get them at plus, it's plus 135. But if you want them on the money line, it's minus 150.
Right.
Yeah.
Rosie, in that first game, Redwoods, Whipsnakes, who would you take?
So, you know, it's funny. I was actually thinking I was going to take the Redwoods, but after having listened to Patrick, I would certainly switch over to the Whipsnakes.
Ah, very good. A man who's able to change his mind.
Right.
The Whipsnakes, laying the goal and a half for the money line?
I would go goal and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just based strictly on the names and, you know, the players, you know, looking at it like how you would look at it, you know, if you were just going team against team. I had thought in my mind, yeah, you know, maybe I'll go one direction, and then it was explained to me another way there. And so, yeah, if I was tossing in some cash, I would go with Whipsnakes on that one.
Kyle, is this a game that the aggregate score is like 12-11, or is it going to be higher than that?
It could very well be low. And I think the over-under is pretty appropriate for this game. I think it's the over-under is a little insane for the second game.
Let's go right there right now, because I totally agree. I love the under on Chaos Chrome.
Yeah, 100%. I would take the under. And it's actually, you know, they're both minus. So
I think other people are. Yeah,
it's 29.5.
Hasn't seen it yet. So, I mean, you're talking about like 16-13 game goes under.
I crunched the numbers on this, and William Hill set the over-unders at more or less the average of each team's average for the season.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I have to go like, I forget what the exact number was in the Chaos Chrome game, but William Hill is the over-under at 26.5. And I think that was the, if you average like the totals in the Chrome games, the totals in the Chaos games, the average of those came out to like 26 point something. And so especially the odds are better with the under. It's minus 106 versus minus 115.
Yes.
That is a lot. That is the, at least the odds on that. I wouldn't be surprised if those move from people betting the under.
Do people say things like hammer the under?
They do.
Because I'm going to say hammer the under, man. Hammer the under right here. I think, you know, we didn't talk too much about the Chrome. The one thing that they have to deal with is a completely new defense, which might be the worst thing to go to a season with ever. I mean, not that they are not experienced as pros, but as a unit, they have to figure kind of everything out in these last couple days to get ready for a entire tournament. I think if anyone can accomplish that, it's Tim Sudan, which is the good news, and his staff that he's brought over with him. But I think first game in, it's a little tough. But the Chrome can score, man. The push is Connor Farrell, but the actual stars of this team are Justin Gutterding and Jordan Wolf. Period. End of story. Those are the guys that should get every ounce of ink that Rosie and I pour into anything we do. So I think there's going to be scoring here, but there's not going to be I just don't see 30 goals, even if the defenses aren't as good as they were last year or new. So, I would just hammer the under on this one.
All right, well, let's finish with Sunday's game. So the Atlas are favored by a goal and a half over the Water Dogs, and the over-under is at 28.5. Kyle, do you have any immediate reactions to those numbers?
I mean, that's probably a little more appropriate given, like, the strength of these teams' offenses and the lack of defensive acumen, I would say.
Sure.
But I would probably take the Water Dogs in the money line. Just looking at it, I think that's a pretty good, like, you're getting plus 139 just looking at the DraftKings stuff. So yeah, I think I would take that over the Atlas 110 on the goals. So
yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, the likelihood that they lose by a goal is pretty slim, I would think. So you know, they're more likely going to get blown out or they're going to win. I mean, if you get those three options, then, you know, it's reasonable to bet. I mean, that I would take that bet as well.
I think Kyle's point though, about the lack of defense in that game is, or the defensive issue, especially with the Atlas losing Tucker Durkin.
which makes me, if you go to the William Hill, will let you bet the over 25 goals at -110, which I think is maybe the more intriguing option. That the Atlas last year, their totals were right about 25 goals a game, which is where William Hill got that number. And so if you think that the Water Dogs, are going to be an offensive team, I think that Atlas defense without Tucker Durkin is pretty clearly worse than it was last year, no?
Right.
Listen, Craig Schick is good, dude. I don't know why, like, no one talks about Craig Schick.
But they also really – But he's replacing Noah Richard, though, isn't he?
He can play low, though. Like, that's a guy that, like, you know, led the MLL in caused turnovers, or was top two or three, at least, in one season, you know, on a team that was not good.
So
he was easily their best player.
My point of view on that when it comes to over-unders is, you know, Craig Schick is a havoc wreaker as opposed to a turnback specialist the way Tucker Durkin is. Tucker Durkin's defense extends possessions and yields fewer goals throughout the course of a game. Craig Schick's defense yields, we get the ball back and we're more likely to score, or I make a mistake trying to cause a turnover and the opponent is more likely to score. So it's kind of like the two poles of defensive style and, you know, the do we grind our opposing offense to a halt is the defensive style that yields fewer goals in the game. Do we create chaos and give up some goals, but we're going to turn them into more goals? That's the other end of the spectrum, and I feel like that was the trade that you make when you replace Tucker Durkin with Craig.
And not to mention, Rob Pinnell is added to the Atlas team. So, you know, if you take a lacrosse team and add Rob Pinnell, it's not unreasonable to think they're more likely to score more goals.
Yeah, and who's coaching that defense, right?
Oh, Rick Beardsley.
Rick Beardsley loves turnovers. Kayak. Nobody loves turnovers, causing turnovers more than Rick Beardsley. That defense is going to be swarming and trying to cause turnovers. Your point, Perry, I don't know if that's the best strategy with that group.
Rosie, any final thoughts as we bring this podcast/live stream in for a landing?
Yeah, I'm definitely taking the over on that one, especially it being this first Sunday of games. Everyone's still kind of trying to figure their way out.
Well, they're going to be so hyped, too.
Yes, there's a lot going on there. I think there's going to be a lot of kind of one-on-one matchups, whether they like it or not, maybe some broken slides, communication issues, both teams still trying to figure things out. I think that one could have a very high-scoring final total there.
Kyle, final thoughts?
I mean, it's definitely exciting to kind of like see – I mean, Patrick and I were talking about this earlier this week, like, if we were making these lines, clearly they don't listen to anything we do. Like, just look at the betting lines. Like, no one reads our stuff.
That's not quite true. I think that the odds have all moved in favor. Like, we had the Archers and the Redwoods as the best bets, and the odds have all moved in favor of those teams. The Archers are now the favorites in two of the three sports books.
Oh, well.
Respect.
I think a lot of the action is going to be in the middle. And I think – the one thing PLL's – I'm going to end on this. The one thing I think the PLL's done a great job of is cultivating new fan bases out of, like, nothing, right? A lot of people are fans of teams because of where they're from. And that's not how this league works. So they've been able to create identities for people to latch onto and for people that are parents for their kids to latch onto. And they can root for a team together, and they don't have to be from the place that that team is from because they're not from anywhere. It's great. But I think that's going to drive betting too. Cause like people are going to look at that and be like, oh, I'm going to throw like, it'll be Terry, to your point at the top, it's going to be just like Premier League where you're just like, oh, I'll place a fiver on, you know, my team to win. And it'll be a fun bet. You know, like I think that's kind of how a lot of this is going to go down at first. And then, you know, if it takes off, a lot of the hardcore bettors will get in and we'll get some wild stats, and then, you know, we'll be pretty busy trying to keep up.
Oh, Patrick, last comments.
I just looking at websites with tables of numbers about lacrosse just fills me with joy.
That is a perfect place to end. I want to thank everybody for checking this out, taking a listen, and enjoy the opening weekend of PLL action. If we get enough people to listen to this, we'll probably do it again. So tell your friends, leave a rating and review, comment below, whatever the case may be, and we'll be back next week with more.